Hello! Welcome to episode 5 of the What We've Watched podcast.
Episode 5!
Yes.
Is alive.
It's Johnny 5?
Yeah.
Johnny 5 is alive. This week we are going to be doing our top 5 movies of the last 5 years. We're doing 2010 to 2014.
Yeah, so the beginning of 2010 to the end of 2014. So basically everything up to this year.
Yeah.
So we're thinking, you know, we've been wanting to do a top 5 or do occasional top 5s from the beginning.
So why not do the hardest top 5 right off the bat?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was sort of a suggestion-y kind of thing where we were asking people about what to do. And the thing about this is that it just gives us a chance to sort of get kind of a general sense out there of sort of what we're into.
Yeah, the different kind of movies that like I like compared to what you like and where we sort of the films.
Yeah,
that we
compared
favor.
To sort of other people maybe.
Yeah.
What they think, so you know, the kinds of neither of us are really like the sort of Oscar movie type of people so much. I mean there's some crossover there occasionally, but
well if it's a good movie then sure, but
yeah. Well yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we just thought it would be a good idea to start off with that as our sort of first top 5. And you know, we'll definitely do them in the future as well. Definitely. Since we're doing sort of the top 5 of the last 5 years up to this year, at the end of the year, we'll do like a top 5 for 2015.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sure.
Which will be a lot easier.
We'll do our Oscars.
Yeah.
The real Oscars.
The real Oscars. Which will be a lot easier, I think, than doing the last 5 years.
Yeah.
In one list.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I was actually thinking that kind of I went back and after doing this list and going back and like, what movies have already come out this year that I haven't seen that I want to see?
Yeah.
And I was already like, oh no, so many movies already.
Yeah.
I think I've only seen... Four. I've seen 4 movies from this year.
I think I've seen around 4 from this year as well, ish. And I think one of them will probably be on the end of the year list for sure. At least one of them. But
yeah. Yes.
At least one of them.
I had to bump it from this list.
But but yeah. Other than that, I got some catching up to do the rest of this year.
Yeah.
All right. So any other opening remarks?
Well, I don't know what format you've got for yours.
Well, I was just gonna do like some really quick honorable mentions.
Let's do those at the end. Let's do the honorable mentions at the end, just in case. They show up on somebody else's list. We're not going to like step on somebody else's list.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then I just have my 5. So
yeah. Okay.
Or my sort of 5. There's a small amount of cheating involved, but
You know what? I got super cheating on mine
for a good reason.
I got super cheating on mine
for a good
so
reason.
Fine.
So
it's fine.
I try to be as sparing with the cheating as possible. So I tried to really be ruthless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I should mention before we start, because I know that we're both big fans of like the Marvel Universe stuff being done right now, the MCU stuff.
Yeah.
We're actually going to see Ant-Man tonight.
Yeah.
I know we mentioned that last week that we were planning to go, so we are going tonight. Tonight as
when
we're recording this, obviously.
Yeah.
We know you're listening to it in like 2037, so
it'll be
old news by then. But I just wanted to really, really quickly say that obviously we both enjoy those. We could do a whole podcast series probably on just those.
Oh, yeah.
So I've had to be like really ruthless with that stuff.
Ditto.
I've pretty much just boiled it down to like my absolute top choice
with
that because I could probably put more of those on the list. So just keep in mind for both you and anyone who listens to this, like if one of those Marvel movies is not included on this list, it's not because I don't like it or anything.
Yeah.
It's just because I had to really just be like, okay, I'm only going to put my top choice kind of thing. It's just because I had to make a choice, because otherwise it would just be like, which ones do I pick?
I definitely went for, like, this is my top 5, but I definitely sort of pushed things around a bit to get a little more variety.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a real hard time whittling down from like a top 10.
I changed my mind at pretty much like the last second before coming over.
I did some rearranging in the order, but mine are really like my number 1 is my number 1. 2 through 5 could really be in any order.
Yeah.
I put them in sort of an order, but
when we get to the honorable mentions, a lot of the stuff that I have in there, and I mean I'll just, you know, mention really quickly, but they could probably fall into the 5 or 4 even on mine without too much trouble. It's really just kind of like how does my mood, you know?
Yeah. And I was like, maybe we should make this a top 10. And then I was like, that's still not going to help because I think it's five more on there.
Five each, you know, each is good. Is sort of 10, unless we have
what do you think?
The same.
Crossover. Predictions, how many? One, two? I think we'll have one.
Probably one.
But they'll fall in different places.
Somewhere between one and three, I think.
Even one and three?
Okay. I don't know. Probably maybe two.
I'd say two.
Split the difference.
I have really no idea what's on your list. How strong do you feel about your number one? Are you really confident in your mind? I know we were talking about this earlier. You seem pretty pumped about
your number
one.
I'm pretty confident. The only thing I would say about it is it hasn't necessarily... Like, all my favorite movies going back throughout my life. Yeah. Like, if I was to do a rank of, like, my all-time favorites... They're all things that have really stood the test of the time. Most of them are stuff that have been, like, movies that I liked since I was a kid.
Ah, yeah.
Some of them I like more later, right? Like,
you grow to like
I grew to like them even more, but I always liked them to a degree, mm-hmm. even as a kid. So a lot of them have had time to really get into my bones and just really be, like, a part of me almost, you know? Whereas, like, my number one pick here is more recent, and it's something that I'm less... familiar with, but it's just
kind of thing. In 10 years, it may not be a favorite. Again,
yeah, I mean, who knows? Yeah. Who knows? But for this list, it is.
I'm just wondering because which one of us wants to go first?
Do
you want to end this? Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, I think if you want to go first, that'd be cool.
All right. Well. All right. So number five for me. Number five is a 2014 movie.
Okay.
Written and directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Who did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, 21 and 22 Jump Street.
All right.
Stars Will Arnett, Elizabeth Banks, Will Ferrell, Morgan Freeman, Liam Neeson, Chris Pratt, Colby Smothers, and a ton of other people.
Yeah.
It's the Lego Movie.
Wow.
I enjoyed the hell out of this movie.
Interesting.
Saw it twice in the theater.
Yeah.
Which is very rare.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you were that into it.
That's good. The second time was like an opportunity thing, but still didn't regret it.
Yeah.
Like, this movie, it's one of the few movies in the last 5 years that I've actually seen twice in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is just, it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And it's one of those movies where you just feel good the whole time. You walk out of the theater, you're like, woo, that was great. You know, pretty much kind of flawless in its delivery of what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, it was a big hit. There's going to be a sequel.
It was a ginormous hit.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to make a sequel.
That's not a word, but I just made that word up.
Yeah.
Giganormous.
Yeah. Just a great, funny, feel-good film. Also, I don't see a lot of modern-day animated movies. I see the Disneys and stuff like that, but I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the computer animation. I like the more traditional.
Same.
Yeah.
I've been pretty much out of the loop animated stuff
Pixar
for a long time
sways
now.
Sways me just because... Even if you don't necessarily are enthralled by the look of it, it's always really well written and funny and you know, good in that regard. But a lot of the more DreamWorks and stuff like that.
They're quality, but it's just not my thing. Yeah. I've come to terms with the fact that they're not made for me, you know, that whether I'm like an old fuddy-duddy or whatever, but I can't look at that.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird because when you see computer animation, like, some of those.
Well, I love Toy Story, but it kind of started to trail off around there.
Well, when you see the computer animation for like things like intro movies for games and stuff like that, where it's the real kind of like realistic kind of style where they're trying to, you know, or something like Final Fantasy, you know, that type of, I know even that's kind of dated now, but you know what I mean? Like that style of like trying to make it more like depicting actual people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of like that sort of stuff. I don't know if I could really watch, like, a whole movie of it. Or I mean, I could, but, like, I don't know if I would really like it that much. But I don't mind that so much. But it's when they do the cartoony stuff, but in CG animation.
Where it looks like CG traditional animation.
I just don't get it. It's like, okay, if you're going to do cartoony, just make it a cartoon. Like, make real animation.
You can do the CG so it looks like
I mean, nothing
drawn.
Against people who do CG animation because you pretty much have to do that now. Yeah. I mean, you don't really have a choice anymore.
It's the popular opinion has dictated
but
the style.
It just doesn't appeal to me at all, really. So for me to appreciate CG animation, it has to be like... There has to be a lot going for it in terms of story and stuff like that. I liked the only real Pixar that I really liked was like Ratatouille.
That was
because it actually felt like a classic Disney movie.
Yes, it did.
And the fact that it was a CG animation like was kind of beside the point
mm-hmm.
because everything else about it felt very classic. I actually was thinking about this, and I'll try to be quick with my comments here, but my off-topic comments. But I mean, it's sort of on topic because it's regarding why you like that movie. But like, I was thinking something like WALL-E,
yes,
which was really so popular, and it's a good movie. But when seeing it, I can't help feeling like
I find it.
Imagine if WALL-E was done in traditional animation by like the old like masters of like old school Disney. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the kinds of guys that did stuff like Fantasia and things like that. Now imagine if like WALL-E was done like by in that style. Well, like it would be phenomenal.
Even more recent, that it'd be that, phenomenal. That big popular one, the Let It you know, Go.
And yet it would fail. What's the Let now It Go? It would fail. If you did it in that style now, it would fail, but it would be so amazing.
What's that Let It Go movie?
Frozen.
Yeah. Frozen. Like I watched Frozen. And that movie, play on words, the animation left me cold. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have heart to it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just...
Obviously
kids don't care.
It does for many people.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the thing, is it's a subjective, you know, how it affects you, but that's what it's all about. Yeah, anyways.
But Lego Movie...
Back to Lego Movie, yeah.
The animation in Lego Movie is CG, but it perfectly fits because it looks like Legos.
Yep.
And as a kid growing up and playing Legos... You know, this was like toys come to life kind of thing.
Yeah, in fact, a really cool thing about that is...
there's some practical in it too, but...
A really cool thing about it is the fact that even though it's CG animation, they were sort of one of their kind of rules for the movie was that everything would be done using like actual Lego pieces that would exist. Yes. So it's all stuff that they could actually do. So the only thing that was unique to the movie that like had to be like made... was a couple of the hair pieces, basically. The President Business.
Oh, okay.
Like the hair piece for that the hair piece for Wildstyle were specially made for the movie.
Well, they probably exist now.
Specially designed for the movie.
They probably exist now, so it's okay.
But basically everything else was pre-existing Lego pieces that they were able to use. For example, for the opening where he's having his shower, all the soap bubbles.
Yeah. Well, they're all clear. They're all clear little Lego dots.
What they are is they're ice cream cone tops. Lego ice cream cone.
Jeez.
Like the ice cream on top of the ice cream.
Just clever use of.
But using that. Yeah. So basically they could have just, it's CG. They could have made anything they wanted.
Yeah.
But they kind of made it a rule. It's kind of like that. It's like they're all basing it on Lego pieces that would actually exist. You know, it's a good movie. It's nowhere on any of my lists because it's just not really my cup of tea so much. I mean, I do like the fact that Emmett is the
main character,
like the savior of everything, you know. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But
it's great. Yeah.
I can see why you have it on your list. I mean, I really
wanted to put something animation on here
because
I feel like there's been some good ones and I was like, and this one I really enjoyed.
Yeah, fair enough.
For each of my films, I also have a similar film that it bumped.
Okay.
And for this is 2010, How I Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your
Dragon. How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
It's Lego Movie. I just enjoyed Lego Movie.
I never saw that.
I just enjoyed Lego Movie more. So that was sort of that's the one that got bumped.
Yeah.
But
I did see Lego Movie, but I did not see How to Train Your Dragon. I know that's probably kind of blasphemy for a lot of people, but like I say, I'm just not really into those kind of the animated stuff, the current modern animated stuff. It's not really my thing. So,
all right. So what's your five?
My five, like I say, there's a lot of things that it could have been, but I had to make a pick. So it's, The Equalizer 2014. So it's based on obviously like the TV show. Well, maybe not obviously, cause a lot of people probably didn't know about it anymore, but it's like a TV show from like the late 80s, early 90s. But this is like a whole new take on it, whole fresh take on it. And there's basically the main reasons why I love it so much. And it's funny cause it's not a particularly highly rated movie. Like it did well enough at the box office. They're making a sequel. And reviews I think were decent, but it wasn't necessarily considered one of the upper tiers of the thing, but I loved it. And I think the main reasons are that, well, Denzel Washington, like,
I without love Denzel Washington.
I know you do. But without that, his performance, like, had you put somebody else into that part, it probably wouldn't have worked nearly as well. It probably still would have been okay.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been the high up. It wouldn't be on my list, probably.
Well, it's without one that of those things. It's a movie where
he's not an action movie
not generally.
Actor. I mean, he could do it because he's a good enough actor. He can do anything.
This movie holds up.
But he brings it to another
the
level.
The level of action in this movie is very similar to Man on Fire, which is another tremendous movie with Denzel Washington in it.
Yeah.
And it's short bursts of very immediate violence. It's not long drawn out gunfights. It's not big car chases.
But it's still action.
It's the kind of action that someone who like Denzel
and the plot is still mainly driven by action. It's not like a slow drama by any means. And then the other aspect of it is, and I never know if I have the name, like the pronunciation right, but the director was
Antoine Fuqua.
I'm assuming.
Yeah,
I'm embarrassed at the fact that I don't know for sure because he is like one of my favorite directors, and he's one of the directors that basically I'll pick up anything he makes and give it a shot because it's just consistent. Yeah.
Most people know him from Training Day.
Yeah,
because that's
what he did because he did that with Denzel before, previously. So that's where they were together before.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I like pretty much everything that he's done kind of thing. So, I mean, even something like as odd as like King Arthur, that's such a different, cause people think like, oh, it's sort of like modern urban kind of settings and things like that. And
to do a great
gritty street level kind of stuff. And it's just like, and King Arthur is like completely different, but it still has that signature, like Antoine Fuqua thing of just bumping it to that next level, you know, like, King Arthur's not a brilliant movie, but it's good, and it would be a lot worse in somebody else's hands, maybe, because he just brings that extra little spark. Because he's not one thing. He's not, like, an action director. He's not a drama director. He's not a crime director. He's not certainly not a comedy director. But, I mean, like, he can do kind of everything and put his own little twist on it. So The Equalizer, So for me, it's mainly like the performances, and the direction.
Yeah.
I mean, the story's good enough, but the story's just kind of there.
It's a vengeance story. I mean, to some degree, revenge story.
I mean, it sort of has similarities to revenge stuff, but it's not so much revenge. It's more just about like the character deciding that the bad stuff that happens.
Yeah.
In the world, it's like, well, he has the power to do something about
this
it. It's almost like a superhero story, but not superhero. Yeah.
This movie,
you know, it's just a guy who has abilities.
Makes me the fact that this movie exists
or
and
skills,
it's so
I
good.
Should say. I don't mean to imply he doesn't have superpowers or anything. No, no. It's not abilities in that sense, but he has skills.
He has skills. This movie, what is so great about this movie, makes me sure that one day they'll be able to do a proper Punisher movie. Because, I mean, this movie is almost a Punisher movie.
Yeah.
It's not as violent as a Punisher movie would probably be. Just like, well, he's not a big gun guy.
He never uses guns in the entire
Punisher
movie, which is actually very interesting.
Punisher's all about the guns.
The closest they come to sort of fudging that is the
nail gun
that he uses at the end. But that's technically a tool. That's not actually a gun.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, he never actually uses a gun. And that was a conscious decision for the filmmakers. Like, they were just like, everyone uses guns in these movies. We're going to make one where they don't use a gun. So
You want guns? You watch John Wick. That's gun.
Yeah.
There's your gun.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And,
there's
and
your Equalizer with
that's
guns.
A good movie, but it's not on my list.
Didn't make my list either.
I have a few kind of issues with it that we could talk about in the future, maybe.
Yeah.
We've
all seen
it. Good movie.
It's
a good movie. I mean, we could probably do it at some point, but...
Yeah.
Anyways, that's...
Equalizer,
yeah.
Excellent pick.
Yeah. And like I say, that was a tough one, because there's a lot of things that were kind of vying for that number five.
Yeah.
And it was really close.
Five is hard.
But that movie just hit me. I mean, there are very few movies where I literally watched the movie for the first time, right? I did not see it in the theater. Bought it on Blu-ray when it came out, as soon as I was able to get a good deal on it.
Yeah.
Right? Because I always kind of wait for... get the best deal I can. As soon as I found a good deal for it, bought it, watched it, then I was like, that was amazing. Immediately went back and watched it again with like the commentary and all the extra stuff and did all the extras and everything. But like the same night basically, which I mean, that only happens when I really just get touched and by a movie, you know, just where it just grabs
back
a whole
to back
way,
viewing,
where it grabs a whole, you know. Yeah. Otherwise, I might, you know, sure, I'll always check out the commentary eventually, but it might be days or weeks or months later, you know. All right.
Excellent. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So my number four.
Number four.
Written by Josh Whedon.
Okay.
Starring Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford. Not really. They are in it. Cabin in the Woods from 2012.
Okay.
Interesting. I love this movie. I'm probably going to say that about each one of these top fives.
Well, that's kind of the point.
There's been a lot of, there's kind of been a big horror, kind of horror movie revival in the last few years. We've got remakes of Nightmare on Elm Street and a few other ones, as well as just like straight up more regular horror, like not that 80s horror, but just like regular horror films.
Yeah. A lot of franchises.
A lot of franchise stuff, yeah.
It's kind of the new era of horror franchises. Yeah. Like there was the big horror franchises of the 80s, like Nightmare, Friday the 13th, Halloween. You know, there's like the big sort of 80s kind of franchises. And now it's kind of like the new era of franchises, because now it's all about, like, you know, Paranormal Activity and Sinister and like all these kind of ones that just go on and on.
Yeah, yeah, no. Really. How many some of those now, but yeah. No, yeah, Cabin in the Woods, it's that 80s kind of, not schlocky, but kind of like, you know where this is going kind of thing. And
But do you?
Not going to spoil it. Most people know. Most people have seen this movie already. The twist in this movie, like, the movie was great.
Kind of changes everything.
The movie was great, and then they threw in the twist. And that is why that movie is number four.
Right.
Like, I've seen this movie three or four times.
Wow, that's a lot for you.
It's one of those movies where I would just, like, I kept, like, oh, you haven't seen this yet?
Yeah.
We gotta watch this.
All right, fair enough.
It's one of those movies, because of the twist, it's great when you know it's coming. You get to watch the people watching the movie, and that's, it's really good. And, I mean, it's widely regarded as, like, a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it took a while to get to the theater. They was actually filmed like a number of years earlier.
Yeah, it was.
Just sat there. I think it was from 2010 or something like that. They finished the filming on it. And it
might have even been earlier than that. Yeah, when was it released?
2012.
Yeah, I think it might have even been longer.
Like, it's got
Chris Hemsworth.
And like, but it was filmed prior to him being Thor, which is crazy.
Absolutely.
Like, you know. But yeah. Directed by Drew Goddard.
Drew Goddard.
World War Z, Cloverfield.
Well, as a writer, yeah. I mean, he's mainly known as a writer.
Yeah, he also did a bunch of that Daredevil TV show, that very fantastic,
He's a Buffy alum.
Yes, he's
that's where the connection with Joss comes.
Well, Joss always brings in...
Yeah, well, he's worked with... But, I mean, a lot of them have gone on to other things, right?
Yeah.
Drew Goddard is... I mean, he's... Yeah, he's got big things going. I mean, he was originally going to be the showrunner for the Daredevil, the Netflix series.
He ended up
series,
just doing some of it.
But he had to move on because he was busy with the Sony Spider-Man stuff that was happening at the time, which kind of all got thrown into a weird tizzy because of the whole canceling of the Amazing Spider-Man series. Yeah. So I'm not really sure what he's doing now. I don't know if he's still involved with Sony or...
Yeah. No, it's,
what's going on with that? Because now Sony's working with Marvel, of course.
Yeah.
So
maybe he'll just transfer over.
He'll have things to do. Don't worry. Like, he's going to be around.
Yeah. The movie, The Cabin in the Woods, bumped off the list. Well, not a horror movie, sort of. Hitchcock from 2012.
Yeah. I thought about putting that somewhere on the list, but
I'm not a big biography movie guy, and I like Hitchcock. I'm not a crazy Hitchcock person, but when I see Hitchcock, I enjoy Hitchcock. Yeah, you are.
Yeah. I can't even say that I've seen all of his movies, because he has so many, but I've seen the vast majority of them, and I love
the Hitchcock
pretty
I've
much
seen,
all of them. Yeah.
But I just have, I've seen a small percentage.
Yeah.
And
well, one of these days we should do like a series and just go through a bunch of Hitchcock and talk about them.
And Anthony Hopkins.
I can introduce you to them.
Like, nailed it. Like,
yeah. He always does, man. He was Nixon.
I actually did not see this movie until... It was either late last year or early this year. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was like, I should have seen this.
Yeah, earlier. I remember where I was.
It was. Oh yeah, you watched it together, right?
Yeah.
It was so good.
Oh yeah, it was great. So I mean, good. You had like
it's so intriguing. It's so great.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson playing Janet Leigh. Dame Helen Mirren is Hitchcock's wife.
She's amazing.
Who has, you know, a lot of people don't kind of know the story behind that of like how much importance she had to his work.
Oh yeah.
Because she was a fantastic writer.
So Hitchcock was close, but I as the sort of the horror movie on the list, but I went with Cabin in the Woods instead.
Okay,
cool. All right, number four for you.
Yeah. So this is the one that I kind of changed at the last second.
You'll have to tell me what you changed it from.
I will.
Okay.
But it was probably maybe a little bit of a surprising choice, but it's X-Men: Days of Future Past. It's the newest X-Men.
The newest X-Men.
Yep. Wow. Which I think, because I always thought from the time that I first saw it in the theater, I was like, well, this is the best one that they've done yet.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not saying much, because I've always had some very basic issues with the X-Men series. But
well, it's one of those series, every time they show you something good on screen, you know they're going to punish you later by showing something you don't necessarily like.
Yeah, but I've had some time to reflect on it a bit more, and like I've seen it, because I haven't seen it a ton. Like I saw it once in the theater, and I saw it with you, like right around the time the DVD came out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
because you had missed it.
I hadn't seen
it in the theater. But I just got the new the Rogue cut that they released.
Yeah, I can see that.
The extended cut, and I watched that, and then I started over, and I watched it again with the commentary. And there's actually there's a commentary on the Rogue cut with Bryan Singer and John Ottman, who's the editor composer. And then on the theatrical cut, which is also included on the same Blu-ray,
right?
There's a commentary with Bryan Singer and Simon Kinberg, the writer, the screenwriter. And I haven't watched all the extras and stuff like that, but just watching it again and watching the extended cut and everything, and kind of reflecting on it, listening to the commentaries above, it made me realize like how good it actually is.
Yeah.
Like, and or how much I should say, maybe just how much I really like it. I feel like it really has like turned a whole new corner on the maybe the Wolverine, the last solo Wolverine one, that was kind of really the turn of the corner
for me to a certain degree.
First Class was good, but I'll tell you my problem with First Class. I like First Class a lot, and it's definitely a huge improvement over what had come before it, because the last thing before that was like the X-Men Origins Wolverine and the X-Men 3, right?
Yeah.
So those were really disappointing. So First Class was definitely a step from that. The biggest problem I had with First Class is it had so many useless characters, and the secondary characters, like the ensemble of cast, was basically just as bad as it ever was in all the other X-Men movies.
Yeah.
And it was really disappointing that they wasted so much when it was focusing on the main things of like Xavier and Magneto.
I like First Class more.
Okay.
I also felt that that was a real turnaround for the X-Men movies as well, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was, but I prefer this one. I just had some issues with First Class I just didn't like the secondary characters very much. I just felt like they spent a lot of time on them. They had, like, all these, you know, they had, like, I don't even know. Like, they're so unmet. They're not even very memorable. But, you know, and then in Days of Future Past, they just kind of...
First Class was definitely all about Magneto and...
It was, and when it was focused on them, it was great. And I loved it. But
Magneto and James McAvoy.
Yeah.
James McAvoy, the leader of the X-Men.
Yeah, when it was focused on them, it was great, and I loved it. But it was like, they're way too much time on all these other characters that I did not care about at all. Banshee was pretty well done.
Yeah.
He was all right. I mean, that was the only one that really kind of stood out. Havoc was okay, I guess.
But definitely Days of Future Past.
For me...
Distilled it down.
Yeah, I just felt like it was more focused on the main crew, and like everyone else was kind of just sort of popping in here and there to kind of further the story. But for me...
Also, being a pre-written story, because it was something that happened in the comics, also gave them a little bit of direction to go... Okay, these are the characters we need to concentrate on to stay somewhat accurate to what's already been done.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely... It's ostensibly based on the comic storyline, but it's not really that similar to it. It just kind of uses it as a basic concept to jump... It's a jumping off
point. More similar than First Class.
Yeah. Well, obviously. It's a jumping off point. Funny enough, I mean, I guess in some ways, the next movie, Apocalypse, will actually be more of a first class as we know it, because it's more about the bringing together of, like,
Cyclops, more of the original... The people that you know from the other movies.
Yeah, more of the original kind of characters that you would expect, so...
I mean, that was just a timeline decision thing. They didn't want to make those characters,
and part of my...
super old.
Yeah, and part of my problem with the X-Men movie series has always been that the timeline is, like, a mess. And that's saying a lot coming from, like, comic books, where usually timelines are a mess. But in the movies, it was just, like, because of where they decided to slot certain characters.
Well, certain characters had to
which characters they decide to make young and which characters they decide to make old, and it's all over the place, and it's not even consistent within the movies.
No.
And that's why, like, with Days of Future Past, I mean, Bryan Singer very specifically kind of said, like, this is their chance to pretty much just sort everything out once and for all, you know, and just, like, this is the new thing going forward. These are the people that are from this time. These are the people from this time. These are the definitive versions. Done. Which... Yeah.
I was hoping First Class was going to be that, like, oh, good, we can just reboot it here.
Yeah.
But they went right back and grabbed everything from the previous movies concerning timeline and stuff.
I feel
and
like,
it was just like, oh, well.
Yeah, I can understand that point of view, but for me it was nice to see
all... It was too bad, you know.
I understand that point of view for sure, but for me it was nice to see all the original cast members.
Yeah.
Even just for a few minutes doing those parts again for essentially what will probably be the last time. So, I mean, it was really more of an homage to, like, this is what we did before, but, you know, this is what we're going to be doing next. And I think it's cool that, what can you do, right?
Yeah.
How do you justify something that's completely just a subjective experience?
Exactly. But, yeah, so that's a great...
Yeah.
That's a great... so you mentioned this bumped something.
That So just real quick, I mean, because I know we talked about, like, I do want to do some honorable mentions at the end, but what was really close to going there was Skyfall, the most recent Bond film, just because I love the Bond film so much, and it's really hard for me to not put one on there.
Yeah.
And that's
you've mentioned it to me many times that you like this movie, and
but
it's
Yeah, it's really good, but it's not the best Bond film by any means. And I just kind of felt like, in the end, it didn't click with me to quite the degree where I could kind of put it on the top list.
It wasn't Casino Royale.
But no, or sort of some of the other sort of even more classic ones. But I just, I had it on there for the longest time because it was really hard for me to
You felt you had to pay tribute to Bond.
It was really hard for me not to put a Bond film on there because I just loved that series. But but this one, it was good, but it didn't click with me the same way as some might.
All right.
So, yeah. So, that's pretty much that.
That's your number four?
That's
your
number four. Yeah. So, your three?
So, my three. My three, our first crossover, The Equalizer. 2014.
Yeah. Wow.
I love this movie. I'm going to say this for everyone. I love Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
He is one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
I have a slight man crush on him.
That's okay.
He is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
This movie... I was giddy the whole time watching this movie.
Wow.
Like it.
Well, it's funny how you managed to stay very quiet when I mentioned when I talked about it.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, ooh, ooh.
that's cool. Though.
Yeah, no. It is just every once in a while a movie will come out and the movie is not the best movie ever. It will be flawless in what it does.
Yeah.
And
well, I know.
For me, we've
talked about this.
Yeah. For me, this movie is that. Like, there is nothing I would change in this movie. At no point in this movie do I go, oh, I kind of wish they hadn't done that, or I don't like that, or, that doesn't feel right. Like, it's such a great, like, from the get-go, this movie hits you.
I hear you, man.
And it's
crazy, too, because it's, in that regard, I think it's really underrated. Like, it was successful at the box office, enough to get a sequel and everything.
Yeah.
Or it's...
Well, I think we mentioned this
going,
was your...
It's going to be getting a sequel. Yeah. And I mean, as far as I can recall, the reviews were reasonably good, but not ecstatic. But you don't really hear people talking about
it. It's another one
I
recommend
much.
To people who haven't seen
it.
Yeah,
but it's
like,
really underrated.
It's see the Equalizer. The Equalizer.
The Equalizer.
That's the one where it's a laser. No. See the Equalizer.
Yeah.
And most people are like, what?
I'm yeah.
Like, no.
Exactly.
It with Denzel Washington.
Right.
Like, see this.
Yeah.
You know, you won't be disappointed, you know.
No, it was great.
So, I mean, we talked about it was your pick. It's a great movie. It's my number three.
Yeah. But I think it's really underrated, even though, like I say, it was a success and everything, but it's not cited on, you know, people don't cite it as like, oh, great movie, or you don't hear people sort of talk about it very much, but I thought it was amazing.
The bump movie for this, and if The Equalizer didn't exist, this is a movie that would probably be in my number three slot.
Okay.
The Book of Eli.
Oh, God.
Also, Denzel
Washington. Right. Yeah.
It's my Denzel pick.
It's that.
I mean, he has a lot of movies, so it's easy peasy to pick one.
Yeah, but, and that was one of my biggest disappointments of the last 5 years.
Really? It really bummed you, eh?
I didn't like it.
I remember because we saw it in the theater.
It has some. We did see it in the theater. It has good style, but I feel like it's a lot of style over substance, which is a problem that the Hughes Brothers movies have in general. Like, if you look at From Hell, which is, again, a good movie, but. Yep. There's just really not much there. It's really all style. And that's, I mean, there's something to be said for that. And I think that they're good filmmakers, but it just, for that, it really didn't work because I was just like,
I don't think it would have ranked as high on my list as if I had to go with Book of Eli. It wouldn't have been probably three.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's
a lot of people like it. I mean, I have other friends who like it, and it's just one of those things. It's, you know, it's one of those oddities, you know?
So Equalizer, my number three.
Cool.
So your number three.
My number three was Inception.
Yeah, of course.
I love that movie. I've always, even though I like the Dark Knight trilogy, it's those in-between movies where Christopher Nolan goes off and makes something...
Passion project, kind of.
Yeah, makes something different and kind of standalone in between each of the Batman movies. So for people who don't know, like after Batman Begins, he did the Prestige, which is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
too old to be put on this list.
It's way too old, but I mean, I would recommend that to anybody cause that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And then after Dark Knight, he did Inception in 2010 and then, Dark Knight Rises came out 2012. So it was like always in between. And I would recommend those even more highly. So. Because they just, I mean, Inception. I mean,
everybody's seen Inception.
Specifically Inception.
And if they haven't seen it, they've heard the Inception noise.
Yeah.
You've seen a trailer, you've heard the noise.
Yeah. Which I think is only from the trailer.
Yeah. I don't recall.
It might be briefly in the movie, but certainly not to the degree that people.
Extent that they jam it into the trailer there.
I remember seeing the first trailer
for
that.
It's a really good movie.
And it was the first time in a while where it's just been like, what is that movie?
Yeah.
What is that about? Because they didn't say what it was about at first, so you didn't know, like, is it fantasy? Is it science fiction of some sort? Is it, you know, the whole thing of it being about dreams, like, there was no indication of that in the initial trailers and teasers. So,
with how spoilerific trailers are nowadays, the amount of intrigue
for something that
this
recent,
movie had prior to me seeing it.
Yeah, yeah. Because it was like The Matrix or something, where you didn't know anything of what it was about before you saw it, but... That was way earlier, you know, and to have in 2010 to still have a movie where they give away so little of what it's about, that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think by the time it had come out, it was kind of spoiled to a certain degree.
Or at least, you know,
or more
you,
so.
You had an idea of the plot and stuff.
But definitely those initial trailers were just like, what is this? This is amazing.
There's a lot of depth to
this movie.
Because it
focused on all the crazy sort of imagery, which is only kind of an aspect of it, but that's sort of what it focused on, but it didn't give you any context for it. So you're just like, what am I seeing? And that to me, I mean, I mean, what can you say? Like it's original. It's got some great performances. It's even got some great action.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a throwback to sort of the classic, like James Cameron kind of era of like action movies where it's like, it's action movies where it's okay to think and it's okay to like, in fact, you kind of have to think and you have to pay attention and you have to, but the characters are like much more, rounded and fully drawn characters. They're not just there to run around and, you know, yell things and jump
from pull things up,
jump away from explosions. And not that there's anything wrong with that to a degree, but you know, you actually have characters that are real, have some real depth. You have a plot that is fairly intricate. And I'm sure there's probably plot holes because it's hard to make a really intricate plot without it falling apart at some point. But I mean, at least they tried to make a really intricate plot. And
I mean, this movie has depth to the point where,
but it's so
I've seen it a number of times, and I had to see it a second time as soon as it came to DVD after seeing it in the theater, because I knew what had happened in the movie, but I didn't understand what had happened in the movie fully. Like, bits
it's
and bobbles.
There's so much
like,
coming at you.
How, when did they, what did they, you know,
well, when it gets into, like, the layers.
Yeah, the whole layers.
Where you have simultaneous things going on in different dreams, and the way that the different, like, the passage of time is different, where it gets slower as you get deeper in, and it was just, I mean, it's just phenomenal. Like, there's, and just, like, the set pieces, like, the scenes where it's just, like, this thing is happening, and it's like, oh, that's, well, that's happening. You know, oh, just unbelievable, unbelievable. And some really good performances.
Yeah.
DiCaprio and, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is great, and everybody's great. Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy.
Marion Cotillard. Like, everyone is just great.
Yeah.
So I actually...
I mean, this movie is... The fact that this movie did not win an Oscar is kind of a crime in
a way.
It's
not really that kind of movie. I mean...
What, like an amazing movie that everyone should see?
But I mean, a lot of people did. Most people did, as you pointed out. Yeah. And I'm not really... I'm sure I'm not
Thank
really saying
it's
any...
the kind of movie where they're not just going to, like, haphazardly make a sequel.
No, and that's the great thing about, you know, about these movies is that they're completely standalone. They are what they are. And
Inception,
you go and you watch it, and you finish it, and it's a complete experience. You don't need any more.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, it's great. It
leaves you wanting more.
It leaves you wanting more, not necessarily of that,
but
more of that sort of thing. Like I want to see it. And it's funny, because I actually have not seen Christopher Nolan's most recent film, which is Interstellar. Which
I have not seen
what
it either.
It did after the last Batman movie they did.
That was,
and actually haven't
seen
it yet.
Is it not? Yeah, that's a this year
movie. I think
2015?
I think it's last year.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Or it came out on Christmas.
Maybe
or
even the year before. Probably
no, it's
last
definitely
year.
2014.
Yeah, probably last year.
Yeah.
But actually, I haven't seen it yet. And part of what sort of discouraged me from it is that I just kind of heard a lot of really kind of mediocre things about it. And it just sort of like seemed to be a bit of a step down. I mean, a lot of people loved it, and I will see it at some point, but...
2014.
But I haven't
End of last year.
But I haven't felt the urge to sort of see it, because it doesn't... It just seems like it's not... There's nothing I've seen about it that kind of makes me think, like, oh, that's on the same kind of level.
Initially, I really wanted to see it, and then definitely the more trailers I saw, more I heard about it, like, I sort of, like...
Like, maybe it's just not being sold well, but I just... But that's part of it, too.
Could watch it, could be amazing.
But that's part of it, is you gotta be able to sell it, you know?
Yeah.
Alright. So, two, nice. I guess? It's
two? My number two.
Alright.
Tearing through this. My number two, movie, didn't do very well in the theater.
Oh, interesting.
No. Critically, very high. From 2012, Dread.
Okay, wow. Wow. I'm really surprised to hear that.
The big thing about this list is, when cutting down this list, I had to go, what movies out of the, like, 20 that I had on my short list...
Right.
Had I seen... That if I've seen a movie multiple times, that probably puts it higher than other movies.
Right. Especially for you.
And this was one of them. I mean, I've seen...
Oh, don't get me wrong, I love it.
Yeah.
But...
This movie is so great.
Yep.
I love this movie!
I can tell you very, very... simply why I didn't rank it. And that's simply...
Isn't it also ran? An honorable mention?
It is, absolutely. And I had it written down.
Yeah.
It's just not in my list because I just find that, for me, the ones that I really kind of fall in love with and connect to, like, it's how they sort of make you feel, and it's how they, like, click with you. And I loved Dread on the level of just as, like, pure entertainment. Like, just put it on... And just like, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe what I'm seeing on this screen in front of me right now.
Yeah.
Especially in 3D. It's incredible in 3D.
Yeah, 3D. One of the few really, really good 3D movies.
Oh, it's unbelievable in 3D. But it's very sort of detached in a way. It's very sort of cold. There's not a lot of, like, real emotion
in it. Funny because, in a way, because of the main character who is very, cold and emotional.
It fits but the thing is that, yes, you have your main character is very unemotional.
You're not drawing emotion from other characters.
But there's just not enough with even the others. And it's just a very sort of cold presentation overall. And I just don't see myself in future years being nostalgic about a movie like that. I don't feel myself connecting to it on a level of like, oh, I want to just, you know, feel something or feel good, you know, just put that in.
But adversely,
it's awesome.
It's just a movie I know I am going to just every few years.
Yeah.
I'm just going to watch Dread.
Yeah. It's awesome.
It's in a way.
It was very close.
I'm going to put it in the category of one of my favorite movies of all time, Jurassic Park. And putting those together, maybe that's a bit of a blasphemy, but a movie that every few years I just watch it. I just want to watch it. You know.
But the difference for me is that Jurassic Park is 22 years old.
It's stood the test of time. I don't know.
Absolutely stands the test of time. You could put Jurassic Park the original Jurassic Park in right now, and it would be just as good.
I would watch it,
and it would be just as good. I guarantee it.
Yeah,
because I've seen it this year.
Yeah,
and in 22 years, is Dread going to be the same way? Maybe, but probably not. But I mean, again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm saying bad things about it, because I really liked it.
In 22 years, they'll have probably made another one, and it won't have Carl Urban in it, and it won't be as good.
No, I don't think they could ever make...
Carl Urban nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, Carl Urban, he's amazing.
And Lena Headey as Mama was...
Yeah, yeah.
Scary.
Mama.
It's stuff and nightmares. She's stuff and nightmares.
Yeah, it was great. Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. It sounds like I'm sort of saying bad things about it, and I'm not really.
Yeah.
I'm just explaining.
I know you liked it. I know
I'm just explaining why it doesn't like emotionally connect with me so much. But it's awesome.
It's a movie that excites me.
It's a throwback to like the sort of true like action movies of like the 80s and stuff like that. Where not that I mean it doesn't look like an 80s movie, but like it has balls. It's not
just
afraid
to blow shit.
Yeah, it has balls. It's not afraid to.
It's rated R.
It's absolutely rated R, and proud of it, which has probably hurt it. Honestly, it doesn't hold back at all.
Oddly enough, like the content that they would have had to cut to make this a non R movie probably wouldn't have actually really affected the tone of the movie. Like,
but I just think
like
that, but
they could have made this movie whatever PG-13 or whatever PG-15 whatever the bloody ratings are, and it wouldn't have hurt the movie. The movie still would have been great.
But I think
the fact that they stuck to their guns on
exactly, and it's the no compromise kind of thing that makes it stand out.
Yeah.
While at the same time is probably what hurt it in overall kind of box office because
well we've seen that R rating hurt action movies in
yeah
the last
absolutely
few years a lot,
and
which
also
is a weird thing but.
And also just compromise is like the way it is now like it's always compromise it's always that thing of like well we can cut down this little bit and you know
we'll show the blood here we'll take out
yeah
well,
a little
here.
Bit there and you compromise it down to get that PG-13 so that you don't get hit with that. And that's fine in many cases. You know, I respect that because it's just these movies cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And in the end of the day, like, it's like if you worked a job and all you did was lose money for your employer, that's you're not very good at your job.
No.
So I understand.
I just want to know when the turnabout was. Like, R-rated movies used to make a lot of money. R-rated action movies.
Well, it was somewhere around.
Something happened in the late 90s.
It was sort of mid-90s, I think. It kind of was the last time I remember R-rated action movies being the predominant.
Wait, if we make these PG-13, we'll make more money? And then everybody just said...
Well, I think there was a cultural shift.
I guess the
whole sort of tween...
The general public
the
also
tween
just,
kind of generation
I guess, decided
thing
that
came in
we'll accept PG-13 action movies. They didn't... Like, going PG-13...
Yeah, honestly, I don't have a problem with it usually, because you can do a lot with PG-13, and a lot of times...
Get that one F-word in there.
Crossing that line, a lot of times, it doesn't feel genuine. It feels like, look...
Well, it feels...
You just made this R... You just made this an R for the sake of making this R, because, like, you put in some cursing and some more graphic violence or whatever, And because you were like...
It seems like the goal is to make it R rather than to make it good.
Yeah, exactly. And this is like often a thing on the internet of people complaining when movies are being made, when they hear about like, oh, such and such is going to be PG-13 or whatever. And people are like, oh, that's, you know, it's going to be horrible. And they're judging like how good it's or bad it's going to be based on like the rating. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't get that. Like, I would rather have a really good PG-13 action movie
than a crappy
R action movie, right? Like, that just makes sense to me, but apparently that doesn't make sense to the internet.
It falls into the category of, I would just rather have a good movie than a bad
movie. So it's never really been a major issue for me, the trend towards PG-13, because you can do so much more with it now anyway.
Yeah. I mean, this wasn't a bomb. This movie didn't bomb.
No.
But
it did in North America. Definitely did in North America. But it kind of squeaked by.
People were confused. They were like, where's Sylvester Stallone? What's going on?
Oh, God. Well, in lists of top, you know...
Worst movies?
Top redos of, like...
Best redo.
Previously done properties. I think this one would definitely be way up there. Yeah. But...
I love Dread. I love Dread.
Yeah,
Dread
it's
much.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Definitely. If anyone hasn't seen it already, see it.
Yeah. It's everywhere. Netflix, everywhere. Yeah. The movie this bumped was a movie I enjoyed very much, Limitless.
Oh yeah,
from 2011.
Yeah, yeah.
Great movie, just didn't really have a place on the list, and I had super low expectations of Limitless.
Yeah,
I was just like,
well, that's always good if you have low expectations.
Really, like I didn't see it. I saw trailers for it, and I was like, eh. And then it came and went in the theater, and I was like, that, and I don't think I saw it till like 2013. Like, it was a couple of years after it had come out that I saw it. And I was like...
I think I saw it this year or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And I was like...
I can't remember.
Oh, my God.
It takes me a while, usually.
This movie is terrific. And
it's good.
And it's one of those movies where I like, oh, you haven't seen this. See this. Like, I know Bradley Cooper, but no.
What do you mean, I know Bradley Cooper, but... Bradley Cooper's amazing.
A lot of people have... for this kind of movie, people have a thing...
Whatever. People are stupid.
Yeah. I like Bradley Cooper, too, but...
People are stupid.
He's good looking.
He's proven himself.
Enough by now.
Yeah.
But, so that's Dread, my number two. Your number two.
All right, so my number two
This is where we might have crossover.
My number two is where I get into my slightly cheatiness, because I do have a tie.
Oh,
But it was just too difficult to decide.
Yeah.
So I said at the top about the whole Marvel movie thing and how you know, I decided like, okay, I just have to really be
pick one.
I have to be really tough with it because I can't just start trying to throw them all in there.
Yeah.
So this one is sort of a tie between Avengers, the first Avengers movie. And Captain America Winter Soldier, which...
That's the second one.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I like... The first one's all right, but I mean, come on. But, I mean, obviously, Avengers came out 2012, and it was like the culmination of all the sort of Marvel Studios stuff up to that point. You know, the culmination of Phase 1.
It was
of the MCU.
A dream come true, which is why it's my number one!
Yeah. Okay, but you're jumping the gun there.
Yeah. It's all right. We can. It's my one, which we can just do this back to back. We can share here.
Okay. So that's cool. I'm glad that's your number one. Exactly. It was a dream come true for, you know, longtime sort of comic book readers, like from being kids and stuff like that. I never would have thought that it would be possible to do something like that, not just like some like made for TV crap or something, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you've seen some of the stuff before that has been done, like, it's a joke.
Some real bad stuff.
It's a joke, you know? And the fact that they would treat it on the level that they treat it, and have everyone there take all these characters that they had built up and then put them all together and make it work, give them all something to do.
Yeah.
Like, because that would have been the thing that everyone was just, wow, like, how could you put so many characters in one big ensemble, in you know, characters that basically carried movies themselves up to this point.
Well, that was the thing. These were
and now you're putting them all in one
characters. Yeah.
And how are you going to give everybody something interesting to do? Give everybody a decent part and make it all work and be cohesive and work together? How?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Joss Whedon is how, obviously. I mean, but...
And this is really, like, shows, like, the difference between, like, this movie, like, the Avengers, and the X-Men movies. Mm-hmm. Where they have big cast, and tons of it feels superfluous. This is a huge cast, even beyond the main characters, even beyond, you know, all the superheroes. You've got the villains and the Loki and then you've got Agent Coulson and I mean he was practically the TV show, but also he's practically almost a super character.
Well, he got a little bit more screen time.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely got bumped up a little
Nick
bit
Fury,
from where he started it.
Like,
yeah.
Characters who aren't the super characters still are amazing. And then that happens even more in Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
You know.
So, okay. So, I mean, like, for me, when I saw Avengers, like you say, it was like a dream come true. It was executed about as perfectly as you could want for that type of thing. And does that mean that it's the be all end all of movies ever? Well, maybe not, because it is still kind of a comic book movie and an action movie. And there's not a lot of time for, like, getting too deeply into characters. And, you know, the story is relatively simple because a plot and...
Well, it's a superhero story.
It's an action plot-driven story. You know, you don't really have a lot of time to, like, delve into a lot of detail. So, I mean, that's why I'm not going to say, like, oh, it's the be all end all of movies, but... But just looking at it just as a comic book movie is pretty much like a dream come true. And they haven't really topped it yet. I mean, they even had, like, this year was the second Avengers movie, Age of Ultron. And it was good.
Yeah.
But I still would put the first one above it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was just more cohesive. It's just more...
Almost lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, for the task. For
so
the
that's
task
what I
that
thought.
Had to,
yeah, so
to
that's
do,
what I thought yeah. when I saw it. And then, like, when Winter Soldier came out, I was like, it's different in many ways.
Oh, yeah.
Not nearly as many characters. The stakes are...
Well, it's a Captain America movie.
The stakes are still high, but not high in the same way of, like, you know, world... completely world-changing kind of... I mean, yes and no.
Sort,
I mean, it sort of is, but it's not a big alien invasion, you know, that's threatening to destroy everything kind of thing. It's just different. Like, it, you know, they always sort of talk about, oh, there's sort of different kind of styles to the different movies. And the thing that they always said about, like, Winter Soldier is it's like a political thriller. Like, it's more like the sort of 70s kind of, like, where it's all conspiracies and, like, thriller. You know, it's more of a thriller. And it's completely different, but I was just blown away by it. It was way better than I thought it was going to be. Not that I thought it wasn't going to be good. I thought it would be, but not, like, I wasn't even really familiar with, like, the Winter Soldier stuff from the comics, really, at all. Like, it was sort of after my time to a degree. So for me, it was just, like, I knew the basic kind of thing of, like, okay, Captain, you know, Bucky, Cap's sidekick from the World War II days, you know, was turned into the Winter Soldier and all this stuff. And I got that, like, I knew that, but, you know, it was just kind of, that was it basically. So I didn't really have a lot of expectations or preconceptions about what that was going to be.
Yeah.
So I was
kind of good. That's...
I was just open to what the experience was, whatever it would be. And it just, like, it blew me away. And I find it very hard.
What an action movie.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite scene is probably the Nick Fury, the chase through the streets
in
the car.
In his crazy car.
And, like, the whole time I was just, like, just jaw agape. I was just like, this is incredible.
Well, it was really good to see, give them a chance to, like, for a little bit to have a Nick Fury shines moment.
Yeah.
Because in the comics, Nick Fury is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And he's very... They don't always have the time to give him the screen time in these movies that he could have.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying
he Winter Soldier
make
is where
movie, but a Nick
and
Fury
Winter
movie,
Soldier
but...
is where he had the most active role, for,
oh,
sure.
For sure.
Like, even in Avengers, he was, like, the kind of the unifying force that got everybody together and kind of pushes everyone in the right direction. I mean, quite literally, he manipulates them, essentially, to get them to do what they need to do. But Winter Soldier is where he has the most active role, where he's the most
physically
involved.
Well, in the Avengers, it was the heroes who had to get the thing done.
Yeah.
In this, it was Nick Fury and Steve, who had Captain America, who had to...
And Black Widow. I mean, I think.
Oh yeah,
I think
you know what? Holy crap! I totally forgot
Black Widow's part. Natasha's part in this is probably the best part she's had in any of the movies in a lot of ways, and maybe that's because like rather than having to share the spotlight with all the entire team, it's basically just like her and it's a team up of her and Cap basically. Yeah. So it gave her a lot more to do, and I think that the idea of them working together and a little bit of the way she sees the world, Captain America kind of coming to understand a little bit of that, and vice versa, like her understanding a little bit more of how he sees the world, and them kind of meeting each other halfway a little bit more. Just the character work was just on a whole different kind of level. And so it really pushed it. And the action stuff was awesome because it was not your typical superhero action. Like, Captain America technically has powers in the sense that, like, he can do things that a normal person can't do in that he's, like, stronger and all that stuff.
He can't fly or shoot lasers.
But, there's nothing sort of really flashy. He's basically just an enhanced person. Yeah. So all the action is still relatively real-worldy, kind of traditional action movie action.
Yeah.
And it was just, like,
lots
very
of punching and guns.
Very visceral, very, like, street-level... very dusty and like people are being knocked around and actually, you know, hurt. And, not that that's a good thing, but like just in terms of just the impact, it just, the action has real impact because it feels like something that these people could actually do. And it's not just kind of flying around and shooting lasers and stuff like that, which again, not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's a whole different type of thing. So that's why
That's an excellent like duo. Like those two movies. Like,
I know, and so that's why I find it very difficult to choose between them because
they're 2A and 2B, different. That's totally cool.
They're different, but they're both so good in their own ways.
Yeah.
So for me, so far, those are kind of the top tier of the Marvel movies. And I mean, I like the rest of them, but you know, though, if I have to pick, those are the ones.
No, that's all right. That's tremendous.
So Avengers is your number one.
So Avengers is my number one. Yeah, it's
you have anything else to say about
it? Not really. It's just it's I've seen it many times. Definitely my favorite movie in the last 5 years.
Nice.
If it gets unseated, like it didn't get unseated by Avengers 2,
no.
But you know, it could become unseated by another movie, but I love my superheroes and...
Well,
you know.
I mean, especially if... I mean, we're sort of doing the last 5 years, but I mean that... If you're going sort of year by year, I mean, it's a lot easier to kind of rank things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, how would Avengers compare, like, as like an all-time thing for you? Like, would it be quite a ways up there?
It would be top 10, not top 5. Yeah. It would be in the bottom 5 of the top 10.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, talking about thousands of movies.
There's a lot of older movies that have just, you know, like pre-mentioned, like Jurassic Park.
Oh, I know. And I feel exactly the same way. And so that's why, but it's an interesting thing to consider. Like, okay,
it would be one in this list that would be in the top 10 of my all time.
That's fair.
So.
That's fair. Yeah. It's probably the case for me too.
Yeah. And it bumped a movie that I really wanted to put on this list, but I couldn't make it fit. Man of Steel. And I know I'm probably way alone
on
this.
Very interesting. I really liked it that much, eh?
Most people did not like Man of Steel, from my understanding.
I liked it.
Yeah, I know you liked it.
You know I liked it, but...
Or at least they were kind of ho-hum on it.
And I have some basic...
People have issues with
it. I have some pretty basic issues with it, but I liked it a lot. I mean, you know that...
Well, you're a big fan of
I generally
original
cite
Superman, movie.
Superman, the movie, 1978, as like my all-time favorite movie. And that's something that kind of developed over time.
When you talk about that movie, when you talk about, like, I mean, I've seen the old Superman movies. I like them. Christopher
Well,
Reeves
I mean,
movies.
Nostalgia you, plays a part, right? Yeah. Like, it's
but when you talk about that movie,
necessarily...
how, like, you sound is how I feel when I watch Man of Steel.
Interesting.
You know, the movie, I mean, I realize it's not really a kid's movie, kind of in the way the first Superman was, but... It makes me feel like, woohoo, it's Superman! You know?
Very interesting.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times.
Yeah, well,
and it just,
I mean, that's why it's just opinions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's really interesting, though.
I mean, it's not a perfect movie. You know, it's not... Like
yeah,
I mean,
I have some considerable issues with it, even though I did really like it overall. I think, I mean, the not the same issues that a lot of other people had, or at least not to the same degree. But I definitely think part of the problem is, like, I know that one of the sort of big criticisms was the whole thing about how, you know, all the sort of destruction that happens and how Superman does very little to sort of, like, actually
try to alleviate,
try to save people. You know, they don't really show him saving people and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's all about, like, fighting and, and, like, he's smashing through the buildings and the bad guy's smashing through the buildings. And
he's Superman yet.
Well, I think, I mean, part of the problem, I think, is that, yes, I mean, it's trying to depict a Superman that is sort of just starting out and he doesn't really know exactly what he's doing yet. So it's a more flawed Superman in that sense. But I think that, I mean, my sort of explanation has always been, well,
what else was he going to do
in the situation as it was presented? It was such an intense situation. It was like, he had to basically just keep fighting because any time that he wasn't fighting them, they could just basically go off and cause further destruction.
Buying for time in a way.
So, you know, that's the way I sort of saw it. But even still, I mean, I can understand people's argument about that and how they just don't feel satisfied by seeing Superman, who's supposed to be this great hero, and not seeing him, like, actually saving people, but seeing him actually, you know, participating in this destruction that is theoretically probably hurting people. Even though, I mean, they do make it clear that there's been a lot of evacuation and stuff happening whatnot, too. So, I mean, I think people overplay how bad it actually was. I can understand people's opinions on it somewhat.
We'll see how this plays out in the universe of the movie and the upcoming Batman v Superman.
And that's the thing, is that's the point that I was just trying to quickly make, is that they've already made it very clear that they're addressing that exact issue in Batman v Superman, which is the next movie, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. And that a large part of the theme of that one is addressing what level of responsibility for that destruction and that like loss of life and stuff that happened does Superman have, you know, and just questioning that and everything. And that's fine. But I have a problem that with any time where you have a movie where it's like, okay, you have to see the next movie to sort of make this a complete movie.
Yeah.
Like you can't really understand.
It's not really part one and two.
You don't understand the point that it's trying to make until you see the next movie. Well, that doesn't really, that's not fair. I mean, it's one thing.
I'm sure that wasn't planned that
way. If it's a longer story and you're seeing part one, part two, part three, like if it's designed as a trilogy, like something like, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean or something. Yeah. Where, like, you get to the end, and it's like, well, obviously it's not, or even, like, Lord of the Rings or something, right? It's like, well, obviously it's not a complete story until you finish it. But with this, it was like, it's not so much that it was a complete story, it was just that, it's like, well, you have to wait to watch the next movie to actually justify what we presented in this movie and to explain away the issues that you might have had. It's like, that's not really good.
I don't feel it was their duty to explain away those things.
I'm not saying, like, it was their duty, but I'm saying that if they were to present those questions, then they should be answering those questions right then. They shouldn't be acting as if they don't exist. Because if they didn't think that people were going to notice that, like, that was a bit naive of them to not think that people would notice that, you know. But
this also,
but I really liked it.
Man of Steel's what's his name movie?
Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder movie. Which he's done a lot of movies in the last 5 years.
It's been a few.
All right. So now you're number one. Yep. I'm super intrigued what this is.
My number one is American Hustle.
I have not seen American Hustle. It just keeps sliding.
Yeah, well, it did for me for a long time too. It's 2013, but I did not see it back then. I kind of put it off for a long time, but I finally got around to it, and it is really, really good. So basically, it's pretty much...
Which one's American Hustle?
That's
the Leonardo DiCaprio one?
Nope.
No. That's Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, I have no interest in that whatsoever. I've never seen it, never will. That looks like the kind of thing that I would hate. Yeah, I mean, it's all about sort of the cast. So you got Christian Bale, you got Amy Adams, you got Jennifer Lawrence, you got Bradley Cooper, Jeremy Renner, Louis C.K.
I didn't even know that.
And it's basically based off of the Abscam corruption things from like the 70s. Okay.
Yes.
So Christian Bale basically plays this con artist. Well, him and Amy Adams are like, they're these con artists, and they're having a relationship, but Christian Bale's character is actually married to Jennifer Lawrence's character, like, and just, like, they're just, wow. Like, you're talking about character,
yeah.
And these people are characters, like, oh, in really? The truest sense. Like, they're all just crazy in their own way. But, I mean, the opening, it starts out with, because it does the thing where it opens and then it goes back and starts telling the rest of the story. So
gives you kind of almost, not the ending first, but it's somewhere in the middle first.
Yeah, and it opens, and the first thing you basically see is, like, Christian Bale's character in this has, like a beard. He has, like, this gut. And you see him, like, the first thing you see is, like, with his shirt off, he's got, like, this hairy bit on his chest, this gut. He's got, like, a beard, and he's got, like, this horrible, like, bald thing that he does this, like, insane comb-over job on. Well, it's, like, a combination of, like, a comb-over job with, like, a little, like, toupee thing on the middle part. And, I mean, and you just look at it, and you're just like, this is Batman. Like, this is the guy, you know. It's insane, but in the most amazing way. Like, his ability to just be a completely different character. And everybody's like that. Like, everybody is completely different than what you would have seen them in other movies. Like, Bradley Cooper, like, he has these, like, little, like, curls in his hair, which they actually show in the movie, like, how he actually has straight hair, yeah, but he puts in these tiny little curlers so that he has these perfect little, like, 70s curls. And he has this weird, I think they put, like, some kind of, like, mouthpiece thing in, like, for, like, a tooth thing, because he's got these weird sort of teeth that almost, like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it's just, everybody is just completely different, and the performances are incredible, the story is incredible, the writing is incredible. It's often considered, like, a comedy. Like, it was put in the comedy or musical section of the Golden Globes, because that splits them But in the Oscars, it doesn't split them. It just has, like, Best Picture.
Best Picture,
yeah. So it was nominated for, like, a ton of Oscars, but it won nothing. Not a single one, but it was nominated for, like, I don't know, 10 or something, right? But it did win the Golden Globes, because they have that whole split, you know. And then it won, like, it won an award for the, like, a Golden Globe for, like, the cast as a whole, like, an ensemble cast award kind of thing.
Sounds like that's appropriate.
Yeah, well, because I know you laughed a little bit when I mentioned Louis C.K. is in it. So Louis C.K. plays the boss of the Bradley Cooper character, who's an FBI agent, and he's, like, his boss. It is, like, such a bizarre relationship that they have. And because as Bradley Cooper's character just kind of goes further and further off the deep end because he can't handle the situation that he's in. And it's, like, a lot of his hostility is directed towards the Louis C.K. character, who's, like, supposed to be his boss, but he basically just, like, treats him like shit. Like, it's hilarious. And just everyone, it's amazing. Like, there's Robert De Niro shows up as, like, a very important sort of, like, small role, but he's, like, not credited or anything, and he's not, like, he's in, like, one scene, and then that's it.
Yeah.
His character's referred to, but that, you know, and it's just like, okay. And it's, oh my God, it is funny. Like I say, like, at the Golden Globes, they classified it into the comedy side of things, but it's still a drama. Like, it's still very serious, like, situation. But it's funny. It is funny though. Like, it's funny because it's naturally funny. Like, it's funny not because
the things in real life can be funny.
Yeah, like, it's not a comedy to me in the sense of, like, they're writing jokes and like, oh, this will be funny and put that in. It's just funny because life is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And often in the most absurd and horrifying ways, but it's just funny. And it does keep a relatively, despite some of the serious things that happen, it does keep a fairly slight tone. And I think that's also what kind of contributes a little bit to kind of feeling a bit more like a comedy. Things never really get too dire or, like, you know.
No, I got to see this now.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's been on my to watch list.
Oh, and the music is phenomenal. Like, every so often, they just blare like full on the soundtrack, like no, like, you know, we're not talking like, oh, there's like a radio in the background.
It's not diegetic. Playing. It's actually,
it's like, just but, traditional. But it works perfectly, but it's all like they have like, it opens like after that very first opening scene, when it goes into sort of like the, what would be like a credit kind of scene. And you just see like all the main characters like walking towards the camera, that type of, you know, slow motion, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it plays "Dirty Work" by Steely Dan, nice. Which is an amazing song. They have like a scene where Jennifer Lawrence's character, who is completely nuts in this movie, like it's funny because you watch something like I mentioned Days of Future Past, the X-Men movie, and it's like, yeah, she does an all right job playing Mystique in that and everything, but it's not. It doesn't really stand out as being one of the better performances. Like, there's nothing really too special about it. She does a good job, but, you know, she's just sort of there. But, like, in something like this, this is where it actually shows how good she actually is. Because, like, this character is just completely nuts. And you're just like, I can't believe this is happening in front of my eyes right now. Oh. And there's this part where she's, like, cleaning the house. But, like, facing right at the camera, and what it is she's looking at her she has, like, a young, like, a kid, like, a young son, right? And she's actually looking at him, but it's like she's looking at the camera, because you're seeing it from, like, that point of view for most of it. And she's got, like, the rubber gloves on, like, the dish gloves. She's, like, cleaning the house, and she's just full-on singing along with Live and Let Die, Paul McCartney and Wings. Like, just full singing, full on singing along with it while it's blaring on the soundtrack and, like, right at the camera with just the occasional shot to show that, like, oh, actually her kid's sitting there watching all this happen. Yeah. It's so bizarre, but it's amazing. And there's other things, like, there's, oh, man, I can't even think of, like, all the, but there's, like, just all these great, like, 70s, like, songs that, yeah.
Sounds great.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I can't believe you haven't seen it.
Number one.
I can't believe why you haven't seen it.
Your enthusiasm about
it. I would watch it again.
Yeah.
Like, I would, you know, I would watch it again to watch it with you to experience you experiencing it.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely understand why it's your number one. Your enthusiasm about that was very high.
I wasn't sure, too, because I was just like, oh.
That's from last year?
2013. I didn't see it then, though, so.
Yeah, I almost always see stuff quite like recently. Late. It's like looking at my list of movies over the last 5 years. Like,
how many did you actually see in the year they came out? Type of thing. Well, yeah,
and I noticed that by like my 2014 is like half the length of my 2013 because I haven't gotten around to watching all the 2014 movies I want to see.
So, did you want to do any quick like honorable mentions?
Oh yeah, end, honorable mentions.
Did you basically roll those into your?
No. I actually have some honorable mentions
list.
My bump list. My secret top 10 list. I actually have some honorable mentions.
Yeah. That was basically a top 10 list. Yeah. A cheater.
Yeah. Super cheating.
We didn't really talk a lot about the alternatives, though.
Our mentions are True Grit.
Right.
Not a lot of cowboy movies. Love that movie.
Yeah, it's good.
A-Team.
That's good.
Inception.
Okay, yeah.
Pacific Rim.
Oh, God. There's another one that we
differ
greatly on.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge Tomorrow's great.
Bounced off and on the list number of times.
I actually meant to put it on my honorable mentions and forgot, so I'm glad you mentioned it.
And
Edge Tomorrow is really good.
And Saving Mr. Banks.
I haven't seen that, but I've heard good things.
Yeah. Also, I have a documentary. Don't watch a lot of documentaries, but Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Okay. I love sushi. I'm a big sushi fan.
Yeah.
And I also love Japan. And this movie's just... We're in Japan. This movie is just a great documentary. It's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen.
Cool.
But yeah, so you got some honorable mentions too?
Yeah, so I kind of put them like in order of like...
Oh, you put them in order. Oh,
well, okay. The years that they came out.
Oh, I guess I did too.
Because I kind of put them down as I saw them. So the first one I have on here is Kick-Ass. Because
I was wondering if that was going to be on
the
list.
That came fairly early in 2010. Yes. So it's like at the very tail beginning of this range that we're covering. But... I had a lot of fun when I first saw it, and I've watched it a lot since then. And oddly enough, I still have not seen the second one to this day. The sequel.
You haven't seen the second one?
No, I haven't because I've heard a lot of things about it.
I didn't see it in the theater.
I've heard a lot of things about it, and like I feel like I'm probably not going to like it very much. I've heard that it kind of tends to get a little bit more, like it's a little sort of more darker and kind of like. it's like less fun, and then it's more similar to the comics, which I read the first two series, and I was just like, I'll stick with the movie. Not that the comics are bad, it's just, but they don't have that fun. They're very grim. They're very just like, let's see what the worst possible thing that we can do to these characters is, especially the second volume, which is just like, oh my God, it's so rough. Whereas like the movie, the first movie is just like, it's a lot of fun. And it was at a time, you know, you got to remember this is before a lot of the other sort of the big comic book movies that we're used to now were sort of coming out. Like at this point, the Marvel stuff had just barely gotten rolling, right? We had Iron Man 1 in 2008, as well as Incredible Hulk in 2008. And then that was it until Iron Man 2 came out later in 2010, right? Yeah. So at this point, all we really had was, you know, a couple of years before we'd had Iron Man 1 and then, you know, a couple of the X-Men movies and things like that. So this was still relatively early on. And the way that it just kind of subverted the standard kind of superhero thing. It's just a lot of fun. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about these because these are just the honorable mentions. But my second one is The Other Guys, which is probably my favorite, like, straight up comedy.
Oh, it's another 2010.
From this period. I thought it was going in order.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but it could have been.
So I'm really picky with my comedies, and I don't watch very many comedies because I just find that I'm not that interested in generally how. But The Other Guys is awesome because it's absolutely hilarious, and it has some really interesting things to say. You know, there's some social satire and whatnot happening there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just,
it's good. It's a good movie.
Yeah,
it's funny.
I loved it. My next one is Hugo.
I'm very actually surprised this wasn't in your top five.
It came very close.
I almost thought it was going to be your top one because I didn't know about American Hustle, because I know you love this movie a lot.
It came really close. I think I basically didn't just because it was just too hard. Like I say, a lot of these probably could have been like a 5 or a 4.
Yeah.
Or maybe even a 3. Like, it's just too hard. Mm-hmm. But it came very, very close. It basically really is. It's a love letter to cinema, and especially early cinema. And the 3D is amazing. It's some of my favorite 3D that I've seen in a movie. Because it's not that big action movie in your face, rah, 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 3D! It's an immersive sort of 3D. Yeah. It's all about the depth. And it has those kind of scenes where it's like, oh, it's snowing in the room. You know, those kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I didn't see it in 3D, I feel like I missed out a bit.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
What else you got?
My next one was Dread, which we've talked about plenty. And Skyfall, which we also talked about. And then Django Unchained. Really, really liked.
Was on an early draft.
That's another one that probably came close to being kind of somewhere on the list. It was pretty awesome. Great performances. I do like Quentin Tarantino movies overall, generally. He really disappointed me with Death Proof. It's a cool idea, and there's some good bits in it, but that one really disappointed me overall. So, but then, you know, we did Inglourious Basterds, which was great. And then Django Unchained really felt like an extension of that. Like, it's a very similar style. I'm excited for his next one, The Hateful Eight, which is another sort of Western kind of thing. So that seems to be an area that he's into right now. So I really liked Django Unchained. Leonardo DiCaprio is great. Jamie Foxx even is great. I'm not really a fan of Jamie Foxx, but, you know, he can definitely bring it when he needs to. Samuel Jackson, you know. But really, it was the overall package. It was just a very good movie. Christoph Waltz. Can't forget Christoph Waltz was amazing. He's always amazing. It was just a really good package, you know, and then when it kind of goes to the sort of the violent parts and stuff and like the big shootout towards the end there and that, where it's just ridiculous. Like, it's just bodies and just blood and just, it was crazy, but you know, it's Tarantino and it fits. And then my last choice, or my last mention for honorable mentions, is kind of an odd one, and it's something that it actually probably would be on my list, but I deliberately disqualified it because it's not really a real movie.
Oh.
and that's the Metallica Through the Never.
Ah, that's documentary.
But not really, because the thing is it's like a hybrid, because to a degree it's a concert film, but then it has all the movie parts that are mixed in, and they sort of interact. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, for people who haven't seen it,
it's like a Pink Floyd the Wall-ish
kind of, but it's not. But it's a live concert combined with. I mean, I can't even explain it if you haven't seen it. But and it's 3D, and that's really what sort of makes it. But for me, the reason why I mentioned it, and the reason that it would be on my list, I sort of intentionally was just like, I'm disqualifying it on the basis that it's not really a movie in the conventional sense. I mean, some people might argue it, but whatever. That's my own arbitrary. My arbitrary decision. But if a film,
I have 10 movies on my top 5 list, it's fine.
If a great film, if it's all about how it grabs you and how it affects you, and how it emotionally gets you and stuff like that, if that's like the criteria, then that's why this would rank, because. When I watched this, I mean, I know you've actually seen Metallica live, and I haven't.
Once a long time
ago.
And I
don't think I ever probably will, just given, you know, that I usually don't find myself anywhere near or anywhere where they would be. And, you know, it's I'm not really a go out there kind of type of person so much. But, yeah, I mean, see, like, I'm speechless already.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even, like, a good movie in any conventional sense. But in terms of emotional impact and just experiencing something just hitting you, especially with the 3D, I mean, that's, I think, an essential ingredient. It wouldn't be the same without it. But, I mean, just everything, because what they did is they basically took, like, all of the big sort of set pieces that they've ever kind of had in their sort of live shows in terms of, you know, the building the big statue for Injustice for All and then it crumbling down. At the end of the song, which was something that they did back in the day, you know, and then all the different kinds of things. They had these huge screens that are like up suspended and, you know, you just all these crazy things. And then basically the entire stage is like a multi-segmented screen as well. So you're seeing all these things going on like as part of the stage. And then in between all this, it's cutting out to these bizarre, like nightmarish scenes that are of what's taking place, you know, outside, you know, and then at the very, very end, you know, because everything kind of ends in this big sort of, you know, everything's the power is gone out and stuff because of what's going on. I mean, I can't even explain it. It's crazy. Like you have to see it.
Yeah. You've mentioned it before. We've talked about it before.
Oh, it's amazing. Just, but the sort of power is out in the like arena and stuff, and they get these little sort of generators and stuff, and then they're just like, okay, and you see like James Hetfield, he's just like, you know, it's like being back in the garage, and they just launch into this like blistering like you know thing of I think it's Hit the Lights, pretty sure, which is, you know, one of their earliest songs, and it's all about just like playing live and just kicking it out for the fans and stuff, right? And it just really, I don't know, it warms the cockles of your heart. Yeah. It's just, like, the emotional impact of something like that is just amazing. And the way that everything's presented, and it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
So that would definitely be on my list, but I intentionally disqualified because I was just like, well, it's not a real movie. And but very few people are going to get to be able to see
it. Perfect place for the honorable mention.
Yeah. And very few people are going to be able to see it the way it's meant to be seen. So, I mean, you can get a 3D Blu-ray. So if you have a 3D setup at home, you can get it that way. And I mean, I would recommend it, especially if you like Metallica at all or if you think you could like it. But it's yeah, don't expect, like, a movie in the conventional sense, but it's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, excellent.
Because if I'm not making it clear enough, like, it's not just the concert stuff. It's all this crazy stuff that's going on. It's like a music video in a way, like a feature-length music video combined with a concert film. That's the only way to really put it.
Yeah.
But it's great.
All right, well, so that's our top five of last 5 years.
Yeah, very cheatery top five.
Apparently. Yeah, yeah.
Top five where we talked about like 20 movies.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just quickly run down. For me, 5 is Lego Movie, 4 Cabin in the Woods, 3 The Equalizer, 2 Dread, number 1 Avengers.
All right, so mine is number 5 Equalizer, number 4 X-Men Days of Future Past, number 3 Inception, number 2 tie between the Avengers and Captain America Winter Soldier, and number 1 American Hustle.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we talked about lots of movies.
Yep.
You know, all of these movies, all great.
Absolutely. I mean, I would recommend anything.
It's an honor just to be mentioned.
I'd recommend anything that's been mentioned, because even the stuff that you've mentioned, other than the ones that I specifically mentioned I don't like, which is only like maybe one or two of them, but that's just a difference of opinion or a difference in how they affected us. Mm. But other than that, pretty much all the ones that you've mentioned I like as well. I would recommend.
Just looking at my notes here to call back to an earlier episode. Mm-hmm. Dread on my list, written by the same guy who wrote 28 Days Later.
Yeah, I mentioned it.
Oh, you mentioned it? Oh, okay, excellent. Yeah. All right, that's probably why maybe I didn't say it because you said it.
I did. Yeah,
I don't know.
He also did
Sunshine,
Ex Machina from this year, I definitely plan to
definitely
see.
Definitely need to see that. Yeah,
yeah.
But that'll be on our end of the year list.
Yeah, well, if it's that good, if it falls into top 5,
great. So those are our lists for this week. Yep. And, all right, where can people find us?
Right. Okay. So as normal, the actual podcast feed is on SoundCloud. So you can do www.soundcloud.com/whatwevewatchedpodcast, or just search it on there with the SoundCloud. Like, I just wanted to really make it clear that you do not have to have an account or anything with SoundCloud. You can go and you can listen to it on there. You can download them as MP3s and listen to them however you like. You can leave comments. You can like individual tracks, any of that. So the only thing is just if you want to follow us, which would be great, you would need an account, obviously. But don't feel that you have to get an account to listen. I mean, it would be great if you did, but you know, if that's what's holding anyone back, we'll take the lessons. We also have a Twitter account for the podcast, so that's just at What We've Watched.
Give us feedback
on there. You can do feedback on there. We'll always have like updates on anything that's happening with the podcast, new episodes as they're released, all that kind of stuff, and the links and everything will be there, so you can use that as well. And then the big thing for this week is we are up on iTunes now.
Woo, finally!
They improved. We got around to figuring that all out. So as of this week, we are up on iTunes now. So you can find that on the iTunes store by searching What We've Watched Podcast. And it doesn't matter if there's spaces in the words, if the apostrophe is there. I've tested it all. It doesn't matter. As long as you put podcast at the end of it, because that seems to be kind of the deciding factor. If you put any variation of What We've Watched Podcast, and we'll come up as the first podcast listed. So it's pretty easy to find on there. And I know a lot of people use iTunes for that sort of thing. So you can get to it through iTunes, subscribe on there, and we will get all those listens. We'll be rooted through our feed. So we would definitely appreciate that. You can do comments on there. Likes on there.
Yeah,
you
know, please. Stars and comments. That's how you get noticed.
Yeah, exactly. That'll help other people.
Even if it's like, don't like one star, that's still a star.
It'll help for other people to notice it and stuff. Mm. So that we would definitely appreciate that.
All right. Excellent. I'm Chris.
This is Emmett.
And go out there and watch some movies.
Yeah. Definitely.